This is In the News for November 20th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. First story is from BBC News at news.bbc.co.uk. New study details Iraq insurgency. Up to 3,000 foreign insurgents may be fighting in Iraq, but they remain a small part of the overall rebellion, a U.S. military analyst has suggested. Algerians, Syrians, and Yemenis are most numerous among foreign insurgents, said ex-White House aide Anthony Cordesman. Mr. Cordesman, a veteran analyst, used Saudi and other regional security studies to collate data on insurgents. The figure is three times as large as unofficial Pentagon estimates, but may total no more than 10% of insurgents. The Iraqi insurgency remains largely homegrown, Mr. Cordesman added, with 90% or more hailing from Iraq. Cordesman said, quote, if there are anything like 3,000 fighters in Iraq, this poses a serious threat. And he revealed this in a report for the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a Washington think tank. He continued, quote, in any case, the exact numbers are largely irrelevant. All it takes are enough volunteers to continue to support suicide attacks and violent bombing, end quote. Most volunteers seep into Iraq through the porous border with Syria, the report says. Others enter from Saudi Arabia, although increased vigilance has seen higher numbers prevented from entering Iraq. Some 352 Saudis, or 12% of the total, were thought to have crossed into Iraq by August 2005, according to Saudi security services. There were also significant numbers of Sudanese and Egyptian militants. Saudi security services reported that most Saudi fighters were aged 17 to 25, younger than those from elsewhere, who tended to be in their late 20s or early 30s. But U.S. and Iraqi officials in Iraq stressed the homegrown nature of the insurgency. At the start of November 2005, only about 400 of almost 13,900 detainees in Iraq were foreigners, the report says. Major General Joseph Toludo, commander of a U.S. infantry division in Tikrit, said, quote, the foreign fighters' attacks tend to be more spectacular, but the local national, the sodomists, the Iraqi rejectionists are much more problematic. Again, that was from BBC News at news.bbc.co.uk. And now from Common Dreams Progressive Newswire, a news release from Environmental Working Group. You can contact them at 202-667-6982 for more information. Former DuPont top expert, company knew, covered up pollution of Americans' blood for 18 years. Documents say company couldn't find safe level of exposure in 1973 to chemical that never breaks down, clings to human blood. Study results show company found safer ways to coat food packaging but shelved them to save money. This is dated November 16th out of Washington. Glenn Evers was a DuPont employee of 22 years, one of the company's top technical experts, and the chairman of an invitation-only committee of its 40 best scientists and technical experts. He holds six patents, and his work has to date made the company an estimated $250 million in after-tax profits. Evers was, by his description, a dedicated company man. He was also the company's top chemical engineer involved with designing and developing new uses of grease-resistant or perfluorinated chemical-based coating for paper food packaging. Breakdown chemicals from those coatings and related sources are now in the blood of 95% of Americans, and the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, has spent the last several years trying to determine how they get there. DuPont has claimed that it does not know how the chemicals got there and that they're not aware that their product is responsible. DuPont Director of Planning and Technology, Robert Ritchie, told the Wilmington News Journal in November of 2003, quote, if we had any reason to believe that there was a safety issue for fluorinated telomers-based product, we wouldn't have commercialized them, end quote. Today, however, Glenn Evers told in detail how his former employer hid for decades that it was polluting Americans' blood with a hyper-persistent chemical associated with the grease-resistant coatings on paper food packaging. Environmental Working Group, or EWG, has obtained and today made public a set of internal company documents that support Evers' story. Combined, the Evers story and the EWG's documents present a startling chronology of DuPont's actions. EWG senior scientist Tim Kropp said, quote, these documents indicate a failure to disclose critical public health information about a toxic chemical that never breaks down, that gets into our bodies and stays there. If we ever needed a reason to reform the nation's toxic chemical laws, every American now has one, courtesy of DuPont, end quote. Evers' appearance and EWG's document release comes just a week before a potentially significant date in the civil suit the Bush administration's EPA has pursued against the company for suppressing health studies on PFOA, which is used in the production of Teflon pan coatings. Bush EPA political appointees could seek the maximum possible fine of $314 million, but they have shown little appetite for pursuing such a penalty. The next court date for the civil suit was negotiated to fall on Wednesday, November 23rd, the day before the Thanksgiving holiday and the busiest travel day of the year. Evers said, quote, "DuPont thinks it has the right to pollute your blood with chemicals, but it doesn't. Someone could get a fine for dumping trash if he threw a used tire into the creek behind my house. This company continues to pollute the blood of the American public with a toxic chemical. What is it going to end up paying?" End quote. Again, that is from Common Dreams Progressive Newswire. You can get more on this story. It's a larger article than was read. It's at www.commondreams.org. Or you can call Environmental Working Group at 202-667-6982. And now we'll turn to High Country News, their latest issue, dated November 14th, 2005. Two articles from there. The first one, "Declining Seabird May Drop Off the Endangered List." This is written by Michael Milstein. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced in October that it will move forward with plans to remove the marbled murrelet, a small seabird, from under the protective wing of the Endangered Species Act. The robin-sized bird, which lays its eggs on the moss-covered branches of old-growth trees, has hampered Northwest logging for more than a decade. Scientists say the species is sliding toward extinction in Oregon, Washington, and California. However, the Bush administration has concluded that the birds in these states do not differ enough from more numerous murrelets in Canada and Alaska to merit protection on their own. Biologists in the Fish and Wildlife Service's regional office in Portland, Oregon, said last year that there were clear enough differences between murrelet populations to necessitate the protection of the birds in the Northwest. Their draft report stated that the loss of any murrelet populations would, quote, compromise the species' long-term viability, end quote. But Craig Manson, Assistant Secretary of the Department of Interior for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, reversed the findings. The language about, quote, long-term viability, end quote, was deleted from the final report, which argued that new wildlife safeguards in Canada would be sufficient to save the species. Canadian scientists are skeptical, however. Alan Berger, a murrelet biologist at the University of Victoria, said, quote, "I don't think the U.S. can expect Canada to provide extra murrelets, because ours are in trouble as well." That is from www.hcn.org, High Country News. You can get them on the net, or you can also find out how to get their paper, an excellent paper focusing on the West. And you can find this other next article as well there. This one is titled "Business Booster Still Guides National Park Rules." This is written by Brody Farquhar. A newly released National Park Service management policy will reduce environmental protection and boost commercial interests, according to conservation groups. Specific words, entire paragraphs, and whole chapters in the new rules trace back to a controversial document written this past summer by Paul Hoffman, the Interior Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Hoffman, a former head of the Cody, Wyoming Chamber of Commerce and aide to then-Wyoming Congressman Dick Cheney, has long supported motorized recreation interests. In August, a Park Service employee leaked the rewrite to the public. Bill Wade with the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees said, quote, "The original Hoffman rewrite got so much adverse publicity that Interior tried to deflect that by saying he did it only to initiate a dialogue and to play devil's advocate. Now they've repackaged the Hoffman language and are trying to attribute it to over 100 National Park Service employees," end quote. The rules, released October 19th, will weaken long-standing congressional mandates that emphasize preservation over recreational enjoyment of the national park system. They will also allow increased air and noise pollution, snowmobiling, jet skiing, and livestock grazing, delete a requirement that the Park Service review its land for potential wilderness, and prevent the public from suing the agency for not complying with its own management policies. The draft policy is available online at parkplanning.nps.gov. The Park Service is accepting comments on the plan until January 19, 2006. Again, that article from www.hcn.org, High Country News. You've been listening to In the News for November 20th, 2005. We'll talk to you next time.